Chapter 2. Practical Benefits of Fermentation. Beyond sacred alcohol, fermentation has been valued throughout history primarily for its usefulness in preserving food. Think about how stable cheddar cheese is compared with milk, for example. Although recent generations have seen fermentation eclipsed as a food preservation method by canning, freezing, chemical preservatives, and irradiation, this ancient food preservation wisdom is still applicable and may be a key to continued survival in a future filled with uncertainty. Many people are becoming interested in fermentation for its nutritional and health benefits, which are considerable and can be quite dramatic. Scientific investigation has been confirming the link between live culture foods and good health intuitively understood by cultures around the world. Bacteria play crucial roles in many aspects of our physiological functioning, and fermented foods can support, replenish, and diversify our microbial ecology, which may also be key to adapting to shifting conditions. Fermentation has also been used as a strategy for saving fuel, since fermentation digests certain nutrients that otherwise would require long cooking, and enables foods to remain stable at ambient temperatures without refrigeration. This energy-saving aspect of fermentation also has increased relevance given all the uncertainty about future energy supplies. Yet ultimately more compelling, at least for me, than preservation, health, or energy efficiency benefits are the complex, edgy flavors of fermentation, which got me interested in all this in the first place. Food is not strictly utilitarian, after all. It can and does bring us great pleasure. In this chapter, we will explore each of these four major benefits of fermentation: preservation, health, energy efficiency, and flavor. The preservation benefits of fermentation and their limits. Try to imagine life without refrigeration, while still maintaining a supply of food to eat. Like most of the people I expect will be reading this book, I have lived all my life in the historical bubble of refrigeration. By its very nature, the refrigerator is a fermentation-slowing device. It enables food to maintain its freshness longer by limiting and slowing, via temperature regulation, not only the metabolic processes of microbes, but also the enzymes present in the food that are poised to digest it. I call refrigeration a historical bubble because it has been available for only a few generations, predominantly in more affluent regions of the world where electrical power is readily available, and yet has powerfully distorted our perspectives on food perishability, instilling in us a fear of its absence. And given its high energy requirements, it seems uncertain whether refrigeration will always be so widely available and affordable. It behooves us to safeguard the living legacy of traditional food preservation techniques, including fermentation. Fermentation can extend the life of food in several ways. First, the organisms that are being cultivated dominate in the food, thus crowding out and preventing the growth of many other bacteria. One of the mechanisms by which they protect themselves is the production of bacteriocins, proteins that are antibacterial against other closely related bacteria. Also, the fermentation organism's metabolic byproducts, primarily alcohol, lactic acid, and acetic acid, but also carbon dioxide and many others, have inhibiting effects on many microbial and enzymatic processes, thereby helping to maintain a selective environment that limits what can grow and supports food preservation. However, not all ferments exist to primarily preserve food. For instance, wheat preserves better as dried grain than in the fermented form of bread. And even under refrigeration, tempeh is stable only a few days. Longer tempeh storage requires freezing. Alcohol is an effective preservative, used to preserve grape juice, wine, and frequently used to preserve and deliver plant medicine, tinctures. But alcohol, unless concentrated by means other than fermentation, exposed to air, ferments to acetic acid, transforming it into vinegar. Acidification, by lactic acid even more frequently than acetic acid, is the primary means of food preservation by fermentation. The advantages of acid food fermentations, according to food scientist and fermentation scholar Keith Steinkraus, are 1. They render foods resistant to microbial spoilage and the development of food toxins. 2. They make the foods less likely to transfer pathogenic microorganisms. 3. They generally preserve the foods between the time of harvest and consumption. 4. They modify the flavor of the original ingredients and often improve the nutritional value. Preservation through acidification is the story of vinegar, pickles, sauerkraut, kimchi, yogurt, many cheeses, salami, and all sorts of other ferments eaten in different regions of the world. In each case, fermentation greatly extends the edible life of the raw food from which it is made. To grasp the importance of fermentation in this regard, we must recognize that until quite recently, techniques for preservation were very limited. There were no refrigerators or freezers. In some locations, people worked with ice, but in most places, this was not possible. Canning was not developed until the 19th century. Food could simply be kept in a dry and cool spot, or it could be actively dried. Microbial activity is suspended without adequate water, using the sun, and/or gentle heat or smoke, and/or salt, or food could be fermented. Working with mysterious bubbling life forces, people could acidify foods and thereby create many exquisite and lasting delicacies. Food preservation cannot be separated from food safety. For a preservation technique to be effective, it must preserve food reliably and safely. Indeed, acidification by fermentation is also a brilliant strategy for food safety. Rapid proliferation of acidifying bacteria makes it difficult, perhaps impossible, for pathogenic organisms to establish themselves, even if they are present. In addition to lactic and acetic acids, the acidifying bacteria produce other inhibitory substances, including hydrogen peroxide, bacteriocins, and other antibacterial compounds. Given recent large disease outbreaks traced to bacterial contamination of raw vegetables, typically from fecal runoff of factory farms, it might be fair to say that fermented foods are safer than raw foods. In a ferment, even in the case of contamination of the raw ingredients, the contaminating bacteria would have to struggle for survival in the presence of a stable community of acidifying bacteria specially adapted to the specific rich nutritive environment, and secreting acids and other protective compounds. In this environment, Salmonella, Escherichia coli, E. coli, Listeria, Clostridium, and other foodborne pathogens cannot survive. This explains why hard cheeses made from raw milk are legal if they are aged at least 60 days, while fresher, softer raw milk cheeses and raw fluid milk are not. The accumulation of acids created by the fermenting bacteria in the cheese renders it safe, so assuredly that even the food laws, which hold that raw milk is intrinsically dangerous, concede that the much-feared pathogens cannot survive the acidifying fermentation of hard cheeses. In our cultural collective imagination, the food safety threat that looms largest is botulism, the rare but often deadly neurological disease caused by botulinum, the most poisonous substance known to humans, a toxin produced by the bacterium Clostridium botulinum. Early symptoms of the neurological disease are usually blurred and double vision, followed by loss of motor skills, impaired vocalization, difficulty swallowing, and peripheral muscle weakness. If illness is severe, warns the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, respiratory muscles are involved, leading to ventilatory failure and death, unless supportive care is provided. The major reason we have even heard about this rare toxin is that it is associated with food preservation, specifically canning, a sterilization process that revolutionized food preservation in the 19th century, and is the diametrical opposite of fermentation. In fermentation, we rely upon native microbial communities, or cultures introduced in sufficient concentrations to assure success, to create an environment too acidic to allow the development of C. botulinum or other pathogenic bacteria. In canning, we apply heat in an attempt to kill off all microorganisms. Canning is vulnerable to botulism because it so happens that when stressed by heat, C. botulinum produces a spore that has an extraordinarily high tolerance to heat. Destroying this spore requires sustaining temperatures above the boiling point of water, between 240 degrees and 250 degrees Fahrenheit, or 116 degrees and 121 degrees Celsius, which can be attained in a pressure cooker at 10 to 15 pounds per square inch. At normal boiling temperature of 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100 degrees Celsius, destroying the C. botulinum spores can take as long as 11 hours. If the spores persist in a non-acidic medium after insufficient heating, they find themselves in an ideal environment, an oxygen-free vacuum devoid of competition from other bacteria. Although C. botulinum is a very common soil bacterium, botulism was an obscure disease until the advent of canning, when case reports skyrocketed. One dramatic headline-grabbing outbreak occurred in Oregon in 1924, when all 12 members of a family died from toxic, home-canned string beans. Stories like this take strong hold in the collective imagination and lead to generations of warnings, often very vague. Accidentally killing people with botulism is a fear I have heard repeatedly from people reluctant to try fermenting sauerkraut at home. But it is improperly canned foods, not ferments, that can harbor botulism, except in the case of meat and fish, which require specific precautions. Plant-based ferments are generally safe, protected by their native or introduced organisms. Most foods preserved by fermentation will not last forever. Our contemporary expectations of food preservation have been shaped by the technology of canning, along with subsequent developments in preservative chemicals, packaging, ultra-heat treatment, freezing, and irradiation. You can store canned foods in your storm shelter for decades while you await a big storm or the apocalypse. Not so for most ferments. There is a limit to how long different fermented foods will remain stable and retain their appeal. Exactly how long depends on the type of food, its pH, water activity, and salinity, the temperature and humidity of the environment, the way it is stored, and your tolerances. Fermented foods are alive and dynamic, and the microbial and enzymatic transformations that preserve them can eventually, depending upon storage conditions, yield to other organisms and enzymes. The sauerkraut eventually gets soft and mushy. If it is salt-free, or if it is made in summer heat, this will happen faster than it would with salt or in winter. But with an understanding of such dynamics, human cultures around the globe have used fermentation as an important strategy to preserve the surpluses of seasons with relative abundance to sustain them through times of relative scarcity. Even as fermentation has receded in importance as a means of preserving food for later consumption, it has become more important with respect to another type of preservation, cultural preservation. In the current food environment, traditional techniques take on a new meaning so that their original function of nutritional preservation is being replaced by that of cultural preservation, observe Naomi Gutman and Max Wall. For cultural revivalists, food preservation and cultural preservation are inextricably linked. Fermentation and HIV. I have frequently alluded in my writing and public speaking to the fact that I am living with HIV. As I wrote this book, I marked the 20th anniversary of when I first tested positive in 1991. I am so glad to be alive, and I remember many friends who were not as lucky. I wrote in Wild Fermentation, on the back cover, that fermented foods have been an important part of my healing. And as a result, many people have extrapolated that fermented foods are a cure for HIV/AIDS. I wish this were the case, but alas, it does not seem to be so. Since a health crisis in 1999, I have been on antiretroviral and protease inhibitor drugs. These drugs in no way negate or diminish the importance of nutrition, digestion, or overall immune function. In fact, in many people, they impact specifically upon digestion. Live culture foods have helped me maintain excellent digestive health. I also know from my research that live cultures in foods can stimulate various aspects of immunity. There has even been some research investigating whether probiotics can help elevate levels of CD4 cells, one of the markers of immune function that typically decreases over time in people with HIV. I think live culture foods can potentially improve almost anyone's health, but I emphasize that helping to maintain overall health is not the same as curing a specific disease. The health benefits of fermented foods. Fermented foods, as a group, are highly nutritious and digestible. Fermentation pre-digests foods, making nutrients more bioavailable. And in many cases, fermentation generates additional nutrients or removes anti-nutrients or toxins. Ferments with live lactic acid-producing bacteria intact are especially supportive of digestive health, immune function, and general well-being. As I write, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences has just published exciting new research establishing that gut bacteria influence immune responses far from the intestines, and specifically that they are associated with productive immune responses in the lung in response to influenza virus infection, and revealing the importance of commensal microbiota in regulating immunity in the respiratory mucosa. Bacteria in our gut, potentially enhanced by bacteria in foods, as well as probiotic supplements, can have far-reaching and profound impacts on our health. In my own healing journey, I have found that live culture foods help me feel good all around and give me a proactive way to help myself as well as others. However, this does not mean that live culture fermented foods are panaceas. Many miraculous claims have been made on behalf of particular fermented foods, but I think it is important to approach such claims with skepticism. For instance, I do not think that daily consumption of kombucha, sugar and tea, partially fermented, is likely to cure diabetes as claimed by some web promoters. I think people with diabetes should use kombucha only in moderation, if at all, and perhaps get their live cultures from less sugary ferments such as sauerkraut and yogurt. The potential improvement of overall health does not necessarily ensure any particular outcome, and specific claims must bear scrutiny. In 2010, yogurt giant Danone was found by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission to have made false and misleading claims by suggesting in its marketing that its probiotic yogurt product line reduces the likelihood of getting a cold or the flu, and is scientifically proven to help with slow intestinal transit. The FTC action forced Danone to stop making these unsubstantiated claims and pay $21 million to the 39 states that had challenged them. In our culture of immediate gratification, we want magic bullet cures, and enterprising marketers wish to oblige us. While I wish it were so, live culture foods are not a cure for AIDS. And although consumption of yogurt, sauerkraut, miso, and other live culture foods has been correlated with diminished cancer risks, I'm not convinced that any, or all, of them would be sufficient as primary treatment of an acute cancer. Digestive improvement. Leslie Kolkmeier. For years I have been diagnosed, wrongly, with IBS, celiac disease, and a variety of other attempts to explain my cranky gut. Recently I began making sauerkraut. My gut problems have nearly disappeared, and I am slowly adding back the occasional wheat product. A chocolate chip cookie and a brownie were my first tests, and a pizza is coming up next. I think my natural probiotics had been wiped out by frequent rounds of antibiotics for Lyme disease, cardiac problems requiring antibiotics before dental work, and so on. Well-being and healing are not simple phenomena attributable to any single determinative factor. Fermented foods are not the secret to health and longevity. Nor is exercise, nor a curious mind, nor an open heart, nor a wholesome diet, nor inner contentment, nor sexual bliss, nor regular bowel movements, nor restful sleep. But each of these, along with innumerable other factors, influences the overall state of our well-being. And fermented foods are part of the picture. In this chapter, I will briefly describe the major nutritional and health benefits of fermented foods and beverages, summarize findings of the peer-reviewed scientific and medical literature, and try to answer some of the questions that have come up repeatedly in my email and public presentations. It is the purported health benefits that are drawing many people to become aware of fermented foods as such. I do not have absolute answers. Scientific understandings of the role of bacteria in mediating and regulating physiological processes in our bodies are crude and rudimentary. Even less is understood about the dynamics of ingesting live cultures, how they interact with the indigenous populations, and how the mucosal intestinal linings function to mediate the bacterial balance, an important aspect of what we call our immune system. In a manner of contemporary scientific investigation, much of the research is corporate-sponsored and extremely narrow, measuring the impact of specific probiotic cultures, often proprietary strains, on various quantifiable biochemical markers, resulting in carefully guarded conclusions studded with caveats. How far can we extrapolate from that? Many basic facts and mechanisms remain unknown. But it seems that science is gradually confirming what traditional cultures always somehow just knew, that fermented foods are special foods, able to nourish us deeply and help keep us healthy. Jiangs are fermented condiments, precursors to miso and soy sauce, though made from meat, fish, and vegetables, before beans, that were widely eaten in China more than 2,000 years ago. The 5th century Analects of Confucius, Lun Yu, note that Confucius would not eat a food without its proper jiang, and the Confucian classic Chao Li describes the duties of the superintendent of fermented victuals. William Shurtleff and Akiko Aoyagi, in their extensive historical bibliography on miso, jiangs, and other soy ferments, cite a 1596 source, Benkao Gangmu, The Great Pharmacopoeia, which traces the word jiang to a document written in the year 150, which explains jiang is like a military general who directs and can control the poison in food. It is just like a general controlling the evil elements in the population. I'm not sure I approve of the metaphoric imagery, but it is a very early document clearly ascribing great power to this fermented food. The Chinese are not unique in associating fermented foods with good health. The Four people of Darfur believe that kawal, a food made by fermenting a paste of the crushed green leaves of a plant also known as kawal, Cassia obtusifolia, prevents disease and beyond that possesses mystical powers. In many places, yogurt, kefir, and other fermented milks have traditionally been associated with good health and long life. Eli Metchnikoff, a Russian pioneer microbiologist, proposed in his 1907 book, The Prolongation of Life, that lactic acid bacteria in yogurt explained the unusual longevity of Bulgarian peasants. Ever since, people in many different parts of the world have deliberately sought out yogurt, kefir, and many other foods populated by lactic acid bacteria, LAB, as well as, in more recent times, probiotic supplements and nutraceutical formulations. Broadly speaking, what I would consider to be the primary health benefits of fermentation, each of which will be explored, are 1. Predigestion of nutrients into more accessible and bioavailable forms. 2. Nutritional enhancement and creation of unique micronutrients. 3. Detoxification and transformation of anti-nutrients into nutrients, and 4. Live LAB cultures present and alive in certain ferments, but not all. Pre-digestion. Fermentation is the digestive action of bacterial and fungal cells and their enzymes. Food may be preserved, but its composition is altered by the digestive processes of the organisms involved. Organic compounds are metabolized into more elemental forms. Minerals become more bioavailable, and certain difficult-to-digest compounds are broken down. In the varied soy ferments, fungi and bacteria digest the bean's prodigious protein into amino acids we can more readily assimilate. With milk, LAB convert lactose into lactic acid. Meat and fish are tenderized by the enzymatic digestion of fermentation. Nutritional enhancement. In the process of predigestion, many ferments accumulate increased levels of B vitamins, including thiamine, B1, riboflavin, B2, and niacin, B3, as compared with the raw ingredients prior to fermentation. Vitamin B12 is controversial. As tempeh and some other plant source ferments once thought to contain high levels of B12 have been found instead to contain inactive analogs, now known as pseudo-vitamin B12. Some contend that bacterial contamination of the pure Rhizopus oligosporus tempeh cultures in non-industrial settings accounts for B12 in traditional tempeh, but not in the pure culture product. Fermentation increases availability of the essential amino acid lysine in cereal grains, more markedly in LAB-containing sourdoughs than in pure yeast fermentations. Various ferments create unique micronutrients, not present in the raw ingredients, produced by the fermenting organisms. For instance, the Japanese soy ferment natto contains an enzyme called natto kinase, which exhibits very potent fibrinolytic activity for managing a wide range of diseases, including hypertension, atherosclerosis, coronary artery disease, such as angina, stroke, and peripheral vascular disease. New research has found that natto kinase also degrades amyloid fibrils and may be effective as a treatment for Alzheimer's disease. In cabbage fermentation, phytochemicals known as glucosinolates are broken down into compounds including isothiocyanates and indole-3-carbinol, anti-carcinogens capable of preventing certain cancers, according to the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry. Who knows what other compounds, as yet unrecognized by science, may be present in all our varied ferments? Detoxification. Fermentation can remove a variety of toxic compounds from foods, in some cases transforming them from anti-nutrients into nutrients. Certain food toxins in sufficient doses are dramatic poisons, like cyanide. The high cyanide bitter cassava tubers, Manihot esculenta, also known as yucca and manioc, that grow in some regions of the world are detoxified if you peel and coarsely chop them, followed by several days of fermentation by simply soaking in water. Note that the cassava/yucca/manioc that gets exported and is commercially available in most U.S. cities is typically not bitter. Similarly, many nuts, from acorns to Western Australia's macrazamia nuts, must be soaked for days or even weeks to remove tannic or bitter compounds, inevitably fermenting in this process. Some of the toxins in foods can be quite subtle. For example, phytates, found in all grains, legumes, seeds, and nuts, function as anti-nutrients by binding minerals and thus rendering them unavailable for our absorption. During fermentation, the enzyme phytase releases minerals from their phytate bond, increasing their solubility and ultimately improving and facilitating their intestinal absorption. A 2007 study comparing availability of zinc and iron in idli batter, made from rice and lentils, before and after fermentation found that the process significantly increased bioaccessibility of both minerals. Fermentation has been found to reduce naturally occurring nitrate and oxalic acid in vegetables. It has also been found to biodegrade certain pesticide residues on vegetables. Fermentation may have saved my life. Fermentation enthusiast David Westerland of Bellingham, Washington, accidentally harvested poison hemlock roots, thinking they were wild carrots, and fermented them. When he ate some, he got sick. I noticed that my eyes were not tracking. Basically, as I shifted my eye muscles, they were delayed in responding. Scary. My head felt a bit tingly. But he did not experience any of the life-threatening symptoms, such as a racing heart, shortness of breath, or coma, warned of by a poison control phone line. Fermentation may have saved my life, he reflects. It definitely lessened the effects of the poison. Fermentation has long been used as a strategy to make contaminated drinking water safe, by adding fermentable sugars and allowing a small accumulation of alcohol and/or acids to destroy the bacterial contaminants. There have been some reports that miso may effectively remove heavy metals from our bodies, but unfortunately I have been unable to find any research documenting this claim. I hope it turns out to be true. Please exercise caution. Do not assume that every toxic substance can be removed or transformed by fermentation just because some can.